Greg Berhalter.
All right, Cubs fans, you're getting ready for the World Cup? The USA is back, baby! Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the homies. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Football! America's is back, baby! Just like the U.S. men's national team, apparently, unfortunately, on this Monday, June 20th, we do not have Hercules Gomez. He's lost on the sands of South Beach. I'm sure we'll get a full explanation on Thursday, but don't worry. We have an incredible lineup of guests scheduled for this show. You're going to hear from Julie Foudy. You're going to hear from Craig Burley. We're going to have Sam Borden's one-on-one with Walker Zimmerman as we continue our road to Qatar. But first things first, let's welcome into the show none other than our first guest here on Football Americas, my good friend and colleague. You've seen him before on ESPN FC. You've seen him before on this show, Alejandro Moreno. Ale, how you doing, my good man?
I was doing okay until I heard that Craig Burley's going to be on this show. What happened to Football Americas? What? Honestly, Hercules goes on vacation, whatever he's doing in South Beach. Okay, I get the invite. But then Craig Burley steps in. Man, we are getting desperate now.
But there can be no complaints. There can be no complaints. In the order of the show, the A block, let it be noted, belongs to Alejandro Moreno, okay? So we're leading off with you, Ale. You can appreciate that, ever the baseball guy. Hey, so we had a big weekend in Major League Soccer. Let's get to some of the highlights. A couple of big games for the LA teams. We'll start with the LA Galaxy and Portland Timbers. Pick this one up in the 38th minute. Yimi Chara, the ageless Yimi Chara, putting the Timbers up 1-0 on the LA Galaxy. Portland looking good early on in this match. The Galaxy nearly finding an equalizer in the 67th minute. Chicharito, no. Oh my, Ale, I know you don't have the return. You can't see this, but this was Ale Moreno type of range. Chicharito, I think it went out for a throw-in. No worries. What Chicharito couldn't do, Dejan Jovetic, he could do it. At the near post, the header. Julian Araujo, the service. And the match finishes 1-1 between the LA Galaxy and the Portland Timbers. That one early Saturday afternoon, a little bit later. We had Seattle against LAFC. No Carlos Vela to start this one. He would come on in the second half. And in the second half, it was Albert Rusnak with a goal in the 58th minute to give Seattle a 1-0 lead. Rusnak, I think, played 3 or 4 games for Slovakia over the recent international window. Boy, tireless. Look at him getting the goal there for Seattle to put them up 1-0. LAFC in the 79th minute, Chicho Arango strikes to make it 1-1. Look at this play, beautiful header, somehow finds the back of the net. And LAFC making it 1-1 to get a valuable point on the road against your CONCACAF Champions League winning Seattle Sounders. So here's a look at the top half of the Western Conference. LAFC, not just the top of the West, but also right now number one in the Supporters' Shield race. There we see down in fifth, the LA Galaxy with 24 points so far this season. All right, Ale, who do you think's a better bet to win MLS Cup? Here's we are about halfway through the MLS campaign.
Well, where we are currently, I think there is no question that it would be LAFC. I think LAFC is a team that can be far more dynamic and far more explosive in the attack than the LA Galaxy. My issue with the LA Galaxy is that they just don't score enough goals. Only 18 goals this season so far in 15 matches. Now, to be fair to them, they don't give up many goals either. But what that tells us is that a lot of their games are one-goal games. There isn't a whole lot of difference between them and the rest of the other teams in the Western Conference. So for me, when I think of a team that has a higher ceiling, you have to imagine that that is LAFC. They're more explosive in the attack. They're defending just as well as the LA Galaxy. If you put them together right now, side by side, you have to pick one to win MLS Cup, it would have to be LAFC.
Yeah, obvious answer here is definitely LAFC. If I'm looking for an advantage for the LA Galaxy, I'm saying, well, if they play in Carson, we know LAFC can't win there. But if you look at the standings, I think it's very unlikely that LAFC would indeed have to go to Carson to play a big game. I think the other thing that we have to acknowledge when we look at these two teams is, in terms of management, maybe there the LA Galaxy have an advantage, right? Greg Vanney has done it before in MLS Cup. I think Steve Cherundolo, incredible playing career, but that managerial resume a little bit thin. Ale, I was looking at the MLS Cup odds earlier, and right now LAFC and New York City are the Las Vegas favorites. If you look at the Western Conference, would you have LAFC right now as your favorite over a team, per se, like Seattle? Because I know recently on ESPN FC, I felt like I heard you weren't very convinced of that Chiellini signing.
My position on the Chiellini signing is that this is not the direction that Major League Soccer has been heading into over the last few seasons, or at the very least, the rhetoric. The messaging coming out of MLS is that we're looking for young, exciting players who come and develop here in Major League Soccer, become the best version of themselves, and then eventually, because you're part of the market now, you go and sell those players somewhere else, and then they go and play, say, in the Premier League, in the case of Miguel Almirón. That seemed to be the thought pattern going forward with MLS. Chiellini, as good a professional as he has been for Juventus, as great a player as he has been for Juventus, for Italy, as world-class a defender as he has been, the truth is, part of the reason as to why he has had a difficult time over the last couple of seasons with Juventus is injuries. And that's a problem. That's an issue. That's not about your level of play. That has to do more with wear and tear. And that's not going to get any better. If there's something that we say about MLS is the physicality of this league, the back and forth, the running, and then the traveling as well. These things that we mentioned about MLS time and time again don't go away just because Chiellini show up. This thing still remain. And so Chiellini will have to deal with some of the same circumstances that MLS players have had to deal with over the last decade or so. That doesn't change at all. So for me, it just doesn't seem to match the rhetoric and messaging coming from MLS that they're moving away from older players. This is an old defender that has had a history of injuries in the recent past.
Ale, to the part of the question about who's the favorite out west, I'm looking at the odds, right? LAFC plus 450 to win MLS Cup. Seattle plus 900 to win MLS Cup. That's a huge difference. If you had some shekels to throw on this, who would you bet on out of the west to make it to MLS Cup? LAFC or Seattle or maybe somebody else?
The case of Seattle is an interesting one because the success at CONCACAF Champions League, I think, already gives them a pass this season. And yet, since they're not going to be the favorites in the Western Conference given their current position, they're just going to drift under the radar. And yes, I'm saying that the Seattle Sounders seem to be drifting under the radar in the Western Conference. They usually have been at the top or near the top and would go into the playoffs as one of the favorites. LAFC will have all the pressure on them because I think that we all recognize that in terms of the talent level, they seem to be at a higher level than most teams in the Western Conference. So they should be the favorites. But do not discount the Seattle Sounders. And I feel like I'm talking like Hercules now because he cannot get through one of the shows without mentioning the Seattle Sounders and his relationship with the Seattle Sounders. He seems to forget, by the way, a little shout out here to Hercules. He seems to forget that he played for just about every team in this league.
There it is.
Somehow he just kind of brings back the Seattle Sounders. Yes, they're very near and dear to my heart. Well, what about everybody else? You forgot about everybody else? They're not important. All right, never mind. Sidetrack. All I'm saying is that the Seattle Sounders are a team that once you get into the playoffs, you think that they're going to make a run. But the favorites are LAFC.
It is worth noting Hercules' fair weather affiliations. When it comes to Liga MX, it's also Tigres, who happened to be the best of his former teams, right, that he always seems to bring up. All right, so look, a big part of the LAFC story is what's going to happen with Carlos Vela, whose contract expires at the end of the month. Now, we may have gotten a window into what's going to happen from Vela's post-game comments after the match this weekend. Let's listen in.
Yeah, of course. I think... We create a really good team. We are doing pretty well. I feel good to be here. I enjoy to play in LA with our fans, and of course I have that thing of mine to win a trophy with this club. So in my head is always focused on that. But in the end, this is business. We are working on that. But I'm open to be here, but if it's not working and this thing not happen, I'm also open to leave and find another place. So football is like that, life is like that, so it's nothing to complain. Just see if in the end we can make the deal or not.
Ale, we got reports of a deal, but nothing official, and the clock is ticking. So tell me what you think. Should LAFC extend 33-year-old Carlos Vela long-term?
Not long-term. I would extend them for the next couple of seasons, but that's not long-term. Now, a couple of things. Look at it from the perspective of Carlos Vela. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to go, Carlos? Where is it that the next opportunity is going to be? You're going to go back to Liga MX? I don't think so. That's mm-hmm. not where you feel most comfortable. Certainly that hasn't been the case in the past. So where is this next deal going to come from? You are a player who has all the power in LAFC and has been historically productive for LAFC and MLS. And when Carlos Vela has been healthy, he has been undeniably the best player in the league. So if you're Carlos Vela, why would you look elsewhere? Now, I know that you're going to posture and you're going to throw this out there and kind of create this conversation into, well, if it doesn't work out, then I'm ready to go somewhere else. But are you? Are you really? Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? Now, if you're LAFC, because this is not a one-sided conversation, if you're LAFC, are you really ready to let Carlos Vela just walk out the door? When we just got done talking about the fact that this team seems to have the potential of MLS Cup, but the caveat is you have to have Carlos Vela producing goals for you, producing assists for you, if indeed he's going to complete the picture for LAFC and then raising that trophy at the end of the season. When I say that LAFC should be the favorites in the Western Conference, I'm assuming Carlos Vela is going to be healthy, and I'm assuming that Carlos Vela is going to be scoring goals. So if you're LAFC, you don't let Carlos Vela walk away. And if you're Carlos Vela, guess what? You have nowhere else to really go and walk away to. Now, you may say that there are other options out there, but are those options realistic? You want to stay in LA. LA wants you to stay. So let's just stop the posturing, okay? We know that this is going to get pushed towards the end, and in the end, the deal is going to get done, and everybody's going to be like, hey, it's all right. We all knew it was going to happen anyways. It's just negotiating. It's just business. The deal is going to get done.
If there is hesitation for LAFC, I get it, right? He's 33 years old. The productivity has gone down. The availability has gone down. If you think about what they're paying him, it was 6.3, I think, a year ago. It's now down to 4. But whatever it is, it's a big spot. It's a designated player spot in Los Angeles, which could be anybody, right? Like, think about what the Galaxy did bringing in a guy like Zlatan. LAFC could attract a lot of big names with a designated player spot. So I could see at least the hesitation there. But yeah, if we're talking about the rest of the season, clearly you need him if you're going to have any type of realistic shot, it would seem, of winning MLS Cup. All right, Ale, let's hit something near and dear to your heart. Let's go to the Eastern Conference, okay? Atlanta United facing off against Inter Miami. This one was on Sunday, right? Yeah, Sunday. Early goal from Atlanta United. Luis Araujo putting it in. The assist from Joseph Martinez. If Joseph Martinez is involved, Ale, I'm gonna need a...
Vamos, Venezuela!
And there it is. and here it is. Things going from bad to worse for Inter Miami. Jean Mota, yep. Oh, that's a red card. He gone. So Inter Miami there, just shy of the half hour mark. Going down to 10 men. And things would go from bad to worse for them when this guy steps up. Joseph Martinez, Araujo providing the assist this time. Another, Ale.
Vamos, Venezuela!
Joseph Martinez's third goal of the season, but how about this? His first since March. Atlanta United, 2-0 winners over Inter Miami. All right, Ale, it's been kind of a weird up and down, actually kind of brutal season for stretches for Atlanta United. But we saw Joseph Martinez get on the score sheet. We know that's great news. When you think about the Eastern Conference, do you see this Atlanta United team as real contenders to get to MLS Cup?
When you look at the Eastern Conference as a whole, what you see is that those teams that are near the top of the Eastern Conference, they're good teams. But are they outstanding teams? Mm. I think they're all very competitive teams. There isn't one excellent, outstanding group that you say, yeah, this is the team that is going to run away with it. No, no. I think there are a lot of good teams that are going to fight for that top position, and they're going to be right there or thereabouts. So the good, I think the good news for Atlanta United is that you're not fighting against world beaters. You're fighting against good, solid, consistent teams that will take points away from each other, allowing you, if indeed you get onto a run if you're Atlanta United, to play catch up. The problem is that when you have a lot of solid teams, then that create a competitive environment in which if Atlanta United do not find consistency, and then you have teams above you like NYCFC, like New York Red Bull, like Philadelphia, that their strength is consistency, that's when Atlanta's gonna find issues. Now, in terms of the talent, you like to see Joseph Martinez scoring goals. That's gonna be critical for their success. But you're also gonna need Luis Araujo to be good in the attacking half. He has to come back from injury, and he has to showcase the talent that I think Atlanta United thought they were getting when they acquired this player. If Luis Araujo is giving you productivity and Jose Martinez is scoring goals as well, then Atlanta's talent level and the talent personnel goes higher than a lot of those teams that are now above them in the Eastern Conference. I think Atlanta in the end is going to make a run. Are they going to be consistent enough? That's a question that they're going to have to answer.
Yeah, we just saw the table. They're ninth right now in the Eastern Conference. I was looking at the teams ahead of them. FC Cincinnati, Charlotte, New England, Montreal, Orlando, Philly, New York Red Bulls, New York City. I would really only say on talent, clearly ahead of them, you would say New York City, right? Other than that, I think Atlanta United on paper, on talent, is as good as any of those teams. Do you see anybody in the East really pushing New York City? Because assuming Tati Castellanos stays, they seem to be head and shoulders above everybody else, don't they?
Yeah, and yet they've gone through a coaching change, which... It's something that I suppose we don't talk about when Ronnie Dyla walks away from the team that just won MLS Cup mid-season as well. I think that has to have some sort of impact on the team. I imagine that you have a good core group of players that eventually is just going to get NYCFC through the season. But if we think that coaches play a major role and a major part in making a team successful, then Ronnie Dyla's presence or lack thereof, you have to imagine, would have an impact on NYCFC. Now, overall, I just look at New England, for example. I imagine that the New England Revolution thought that they were going to be better than they have been so far. They would be, in my estimation, a team that could threaten to make a run late in the season and to push NYCFC. New York Red Bulls is a team that I look at and I think very solid, very consistent. Are they outstanding in anything that they do on the field? I wouldn't say outstanding, but over the course of a long season, if you're consistent enough and you get points when other teams are slipping, then you're going to find yourself near the top of the Eastern Conference. So these are, and that's the same thing that you can say about Philadelphia as well. It's the same sort of makeup of a team that is going to fight, is going to scrap, is going to get points. And in this long summer months, they're going to be able to find points where other teams may not, because of that consistency, because of the grind that they enjoy. Now we get into the playoffs, and this is when talent takes over. It's no longer about a grind. Yeah, you can have the character and the personality and the experience that you need in the playoffs, but you also are going to need talented players to put the ball in the back of the net in a tight moment. And that's when I look at NYCFC. That's when I look at a team like New England Revolution as potentially being superior to the ones that I just mentioned.
All right, Ale, great stuff. You're done for tonight, but we will see you again on Thursday in studio, in person, for a very special U.S. Open Cup semifinal draw. Wow, Ale, us together in studio.
Okay.
What could go wrong?
Hey,
what
man, wrong? I'm living large. When I can be in Football America twice in 1 week, you know I'm doing something right. I'm living right now.
Yep. That's a good contract you got yourself, my man. All right, we'll see you up in Connecticut in, 72 hours. Thanks again for joining us here on Football Americas.
See us.
There he goes, Alejandro Moreno. Plenty more MLS coming your way across television screens this weekend. On Saturday, we got Seattle against Sporting Kansas City. Right now, 12th, yikes, in the Western Conference. That one on ABC. And then, a little bit later in the afternoon, I'll be at this one, DC United against Nashville from Audi Field. That game in Spanish on ESPN Deportes and in English on ESPN. As if you're checking your calendar right now, we are 5 months to the day almost to the start of the 2022 World Cup. So with that in mind, let's continue our Road to Qatar series. The latest edition, Sam Borden's one-on-one with Walker Zimmerman.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Traffic, Walker Zimmerman's first career goal for the United States. But it's a walk in the park for Walker Zimmerman, who keeps on scoring goals. Zimmerman 2-0 U.S.
It's so special. I mean, each and every time that you get to represent this amazing country and wear the badge and represent the entire United States is a responsibility that I don't think any of us take lightly. You know, especially these competitive games, qualifiers, Gold Cups, Nation Leagues. I mean, these are games that, you know, when you're listening to the anthem, it's almost like a little battle cry. You're getting kind of fired up inside. It's something I'll never take for granted.
You grew up in Georgia. Son of a pastor, right? Mm-hmm. How did that affect your life as a kid?
I think it comes with a lot of responsibility. You're expected to kind of do the right thing, say the right thing. And, you know, I took a lot of pride in that. And I think it helped develop me as a person. Faith's a big part of my life. Also as a leader and just trying to lead by example. And so I think a lot of that stems from how I grew up.
I read a story that there was a moment like in a, I think it was a high school game or a practice where your coach was kind of getting on you guys really, really fiercely, and you stopped him and sort of said that you wanted to pray for him. Is that right?
It was just very uncharacteristic of that coach, you know, Patera at the time, to kind of be acting the way that he was. And I think it was more, you know, in the break, like a water break. I was like, hey, like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? Like, you know, can I pray for you? And, you know, I'm still really close with him. We have a great relationship. And that's just the product of who he is as a person, how open and transparent he was with us, that even presents an opportunity for you to feel comfortable asking to do that, you know?
For sure. You know, I've always been kind of interested. Obviously, a lot of kids are attracted to, you know, scoring points or scoring goals in sports. Playing defense, it's kind of like a different mentality.
Yeah.
Was that always something that appealed to you, or how did you sort of
come
to that?
I would say I still want to score goals as bad as any striker out there. I love going up for set pieces, corner kicks. I mean, that is the dream, is scoring a goal. So I don't think that's changed, but I think just defensively, I think there is something, some amount of pride, some amount of responsibility that you take in stopping one player, stopping the other team. And I like being able to see everything from the back. I think it plays a part in the leadership and organizational responsibilities as a center back. So I like that part of the position.
In football, the NFL, there's like, you know, position groups, guys are really sort of a certain community, I guess, among, you know, cornerbacks or running backs. With defenders, is there a similar sort of, you know, brotherhood, do you think?
I think there is. I think, you know, you have Keeper Island over there. That's always its separate animal. But I think with defenders, it might not be the most fun position on the field, but there's a lot of pride in both training and in games of keeping a shutout, keeping a zero, and the reinforcement of doing dirty work. And it might not get noticed, but you know that you're doing your part for the team. And so I think that maybe the lack of recognition creates a bond between you of you're doing it because you want to win, because you want to help the team. And I think all of us here have that, and that certainly kind of makes that defensive group a collective that likes to stick together.
What do you remember about the first time you got called in for the senior team? Where were you when you got the first call?
Right, for me, I was visiting my brother in the off season. He was teaching. It was like, I think his first year of teaching at Wesleyan High School outside of Atlanta. And I had a good 2016, good season with Dallas. We won two trophies that year and got a call from Bruce. And it's like, hey, you know, you've had a great year. We want to bring you into January camp. And my wedding was like, you know, New Year's Eve, and I was honeymoon. I literally stayed at the airport. My wife flew back, and I flew straight from our honeymoon to January camp in 2017.
How did that conversation go exactly? So where was your honeymoon, and then how did that conversation go? Like, all right, you fly yourself. I'll see you later.
Right. Well, so our honeymoon, we ended up going to California. It was at the time like Zika virus was crazy in the Caribbean, and so we kind of pivoted and did a California, flew into L.A., we did Santa Barbara, Big Sur, and San Francisco. The conversation, I mean, she knew what she was signing up for, the risks of the job, and so she's gotten kind of used to me being away every January at this point.
The dynamic in this group, you know, I mean, Greg's talked about it, everybody's talked about it. It's young, you know? I mean, there's a lot of guys that are sort of learning as they go together. How would you describe the dynamic among this group, and Where do you think leadership comes from in a situation like that, where there isn't necessarily a ton of guys that have been there a million times before?
It's true. It is a young group, a group that might not have the most experience at, you know, the international level, certainly in terms of qualifying experience. But, you know, it's a group that's extremely competitive and extremely successful at the club level. A lot of guys have played in really big games for big clubs. And I think the thing that resonates throughout the entire roster is the competitiveness and the mentality of players wanting to compete, not only with their club team, not only with their national team, but amongst each other.
Do you see that? You know, obviously you guys are competing for positions, but just when you're here, you're spending, you know, 2 weeks together, do you see it? I mean, I don't know, do you guys play video games? Do you play ping pong? Like, do you see it sort of elsewhere?
I think so. I think there's a game room downstairs here with a pool table, and that's been a little hot place for players to come and congregate a little bit, some chess boards on the side, and certainly video games are always involved, but that's usually more of a team. That's like less 1v1. That's kind of, you know, achieving the common goal, sharpening up the communication on the sticks and on the mic to be ready for game day. But no, it's a good, even though it is competitive, it's not hostile. It's very supportive and in a really healthy way.
Great stuff, as always, there from Sam Borden. On the road to Qatar, here's a look at your leaders in minutes throughout the World Cup qualifying campaign. Walker Zimmerman, 814, right there in the top four. A stalwart for Greg Berhalter as the U.S. qualified for Qatar. All right, let's focus in on some European transfer news, specifically the idea that Raheem Sterling could be making a move from Manchester City to Chelsea, which of course would mean more competition for playing time for one Christian Pulisic. Obviously a big concern for US fans with the World Cup coming up. You can read more on that over at ESPN.com. for more on Pulisic and his future Chelsea. Let's welcome to the show for the first time ever former Chelsea player and our colleague over at ESPN FC, Craig Burley. Craig, the internet said it couldn't be done. Craig Burley on Football Americas, and yet here we are. I have to know, what did the talent office promise you?
You found the money. You told me there was no budget. You found the money. People
there it
actually
is.
Think we're getting paid for this. Well, not.
No, that's right. I want it to be known for the record that Craig Burley is doing this out of the kindness of his heart, contrary to popular opinion. All right, Craig, let's get to it here with Christian Pulisic. You know the news. Raheem Sterling was linked to Chelsea over the weekend. U.S. fans saw that and thought, okay, this is bad news on multiple fronts. One, in the short term, it's not going to be good for his playing time, and I don't think it bodes well maybe long term for Christian Pulisic either. Are U.S. fans wrong for thinking that? I mean, it's bad news for Pulisic here, isn't it?
Well, we were talking about this in the ESPN FC show at length for the last couple of days, primarily because there's not a lot else going on at the moment. And it is quite a big story because Raheem Sterling has been front and foremost for Man City in England in recent years. He played, I think, 47 times last year with 17 goals, 8 assists, but not all starts. I think 32 starts. And there's some sort of frustration within him that with the arrival of new players, that might be reduced even more. Now, I hear you. Why are we talking about Raheem Sterling? Let's get to Pulisic. But it's all part of the story, and I think he wants to sort of move on. But why all this negativity? I thought the American sports fan was supposed to be full of positivity and, you know, looking forward and going to be the best. But every time around Christian Pulisic, it's always got to be something negative. Here's the deal, American soccer fans. If you want your players to be big time in the big league like this guy, then when you move to big clubs at elite level, guess what? There is competition for places. And bearing in mind Chelsea's position, Sebi, last year, a long way off, Liverpool and City, bearing in mind they've got new ownership who want to make some sort of statement, there looks like there's going to be even more competition for Mr. Pulisic.
Yeah. I mean, the point about competition is totally fair. I think that's expected, and we've heard a lot of angst from American fans over that. The reason there's, I think, Craig, a little bit more angst than usual is today, right now, we are 5 months from the World Cup, and you know exactly how important Christian Pulisic is to the U.S. men's national team. So pretend you're his advisor. Right? He's 23 years old. He's got 5 months to the World Cup. Let's say Chelsea do bring in Raheem Sterling. Would you tell Pulisic to stay at Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, he played a sufficient amount last year. He had injuries along with Zajac and others. I think he had kind of similar game time to them, maybe a little less. Was a little bit more productive. I don't know. I'm not Thomas Tuchel. I don't know how much he's going to use him. And I keep hearing the same thing. Why is he not playing more? Why is he not in the team? What's this sort of anti-Americanism? All this sort of nonsense. And look, he didn't get regular game time under Tuchel so far. He didn't get it under Frank Lampard. He didn't get it at the end under Lucien Favre at Dortmund. He has to stay clear of injuries. And this is a concern for players at these clubs with big squads who rotate when you have a World Cup. But please, 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 this is not anybody trying to derail the US men's national team attempt at being successful at a World Cup. This is not managers survive and thrive on results. They play the best team in their mind whenever they play. Whenever they select a side, they don't sit there on a Friday, Sebi, and go, oh, how can we screw up the American players today? It just doesn't work like that. And so there is a frustration, I know. And I'll tell you who the worst is. Our former colleague and friend over in Los Angeles, Mr. Max Bretos, loves stirring the pot. He can cry more than anybody. He must be keeping the handkerchief business alone, thriving with his tears.
Wow, Max Bretos of Max and Herc fame getting a shout out here on Football Americas. We were just seeing, Craig, the full screen of the stats of Christian Pulisic. It's quite a long body of work here at this point at Chelsea, right? 3 years since he was brought over back in 2019. How would you qualify like his time so far, the 3 years that we've seen? Do you think he's at the level to be a Chelsea player? Because I think at least in some corners or maybe even big parts of the Chelsea fan base, that question is still out there.
I think if he wants to make a mark on a regular basis, he's probably going to have to drop down one level. And I don't mean one level, i.e. the Championship. I mean a level within the Premier League. And whether that's a West Ham or a Newcastle or whoever it is, you look at the game time that he's had, you look at the possibility of Sterling and other comers, others coming, you look at Havertz, Werner's still there. I mean, some of these players might go, Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi, Mason Mount, and then Christian himself. Some of these players might go, but then they might not. And so then you have to ask the question, how much game time am I going to get? Am I prepared to take a drop in wages? Am I prepared to move on and take a loan? It's all things you've got to juggle, and I would be concerned about the game time for him. I think he'll get some. Whether he'll get enough, that's another matter.
All right, Craig, you filled your Christian Pulisic quota for the day. Let's move on to another story, one that went viral earlier. This is Matt Turner. Of course, he's with the New England Revolution now, about to make that move over to Arsenal. Very exciting. Signing some autographs for fans, about to sign his own jersey, and he says, nah, I'm good. Why? Well, look at the jersey that the fan who wanted that autograph is wearing. It's a Spurs jersey. So, Craig, what do you think? Are you cool with this? Is this okay? Is this the right move from Turner?
To what, not sign it?
Yeah, exactly, because the guy's wearing a Spurs shirt. Is it really that big of a deal?
It's a bit of nastiness. You know I like a bit of nastiness. But he doesn't want to make any... And listen, he's got bigger things to worry about, obviously. But I hear, I've not seen much of him said, but I hear from my good friend, who is the goalkeeping coach at New England Revolution and Matt Turner's goalie coach, Kevin Hitchcock, who, as you, I think, are aware, was the best man at my wedding. I won't tell you how long ago.
What a party that many must years have been.
Many years ago. And he tells me, in fact, he was texting me just a week or so ago about something else. I was asking him about Matt Turner, and he says, an unbelievable chance to go to Arsenal and dislodge Aaron Ramsdale, who has been very good for them. But he speaks really highly of Matt Turner. So, yeah, just a little funny one with the shirt, I suppose, and not want to upset any Arsenal fans. So he already knows the lay of the land, doesn't he? He already knows who not to upset and who to upset. So he's learning fast. And some of you guys, by the way, you just don't learn fast. At least he's a one-off.
Well, I was going to say, if anybody knows about keeping everybody happy, it's Craig Burley. He joins us here on Football Americas. This is episode 138. It only took us 138 episodes of the show to get Craig on. Craig, thank you so much for being on. Great to have you here with us on the show.
Okay. And you know my address. Put the check in the post.
Absolutely. On its way. Okay, then. Little more from the European Transfer Watch. Brian Reynolds. Looks like he's set for another Belgian loan move from Roma. This time it'll be KVC Westerloo, who were just promoted from the second division to the top flight. Reynolds, 20 years old, plays right back. So, hey, 5 months from the World Cup, we know right back could be a position of need. Maybe this is just the opportunity that young Brian Reynolds needs. Speaking of right backs, how about the case of Shaq Moore? Unfortunately for Moore, just missing out on promotion in Spain. His Tenerife side lost 3-1 to Girona in the second leg of the promotion playoff. The first leg ended in a scoreless draw. It's not much of a consolation, but Moore was Tenerife's top-rated player, according to FotMob, for whatever that's worth.
Cabecito, es un bombón. Ahí está, gol! Volvió el cabecita Rodríguez.
a encontrarse con su amor el gol. La diferencia es importante en el fútbol y en los goles, y más si en esos goles el cabecita es protagonista.
Jonathan Rodriguez, the 28-year-old Uruguayan, better known as Cabecita, is set to join Club America. It's officially official just moments ago, we're told. Rodriguez, of course, won a title in Liga MX with Cruz Azul before being sold to Saudi club Al Nassr back in January. Did not have a great stint in Saudi Arabia, scoring just once, but he is still very much in the prime of his career. I mentioned he played 2 years at Club America. He also played 2 years at Santos before that, but there you see it, the run with Cruz Azul. Boy, what a scoring record there. A proven Liga MX goal scorer making his way to Club America. For a little more perspective on this, we welcome to the show my good friend and colleague, Mauricio Pedrosa, himself a noted, acknowledged Americanista. How you feeling about this move, Mau? Because we know when it comes to America, a team that seems to dominate the headlines, the term bombazo gets thrown around all the time when there's a big signing, a big fichaje. Does this reach the level of a bombazo that America fans are wanting after the disappointment of the last few seasons?
Hey, Seba, I want to be a little more optimistic, but I'm not. I'm not considering this signing as the big bombazo that American fans, just as yourself, just as myself, are used to for the past 20 years or so. But it seems like now this is the new normal for Club America, right? When was the last time we heard of a signing and America fans went like, yes, this is exactly what we've been waiting for. Now, the other side of it is, Club America really needed to enforce that position. They needed a goal scorer. They needed a player with the characteristics of Cabecita Rodriguez. So I'm excited, but I wish I was a little more excited for the signing, because if you go to his numbers, they look great for just 1 year. In 1 year, he scored 19 goals in 31 league games. But if you go to the other seasons with Cruz Azul and Santos, he was just average. So I really do not know what to expect exactly from him. And a lot, we will know more once we know exactly where Fernando Ortiz is going to put him in that lineup. Is he going to start from the left-hand side? Is he going to start as a number nine, false nine? We don't know yet, but at least this is exactly what the team needed.
Right. The bottom line is bombazo is relative, right? If we want to go back to the days of Bambam Zamorano, Piojo Lopez, then we're talking about another level of difference maker, another level of player. But I think this is the perfect signing, right? All of the complaints that we could have had about Club America last season where they didn't have a number nine. They have a lot of options there, but they don't have a clear guy. It's clearly not Henry Martin. It's clearly not Roger Martinez. It's clearly not Viñas. Like, none of those guys has grabbed that job. And if you look at kind of the expenditure here, right, this package is going to cost him about $10 million between the transfer fee and what, the $3.5 million that we're being told he's going to make. That is about as big as America's done recently. Diego Valdez cost him about that, right? So it is very much in line. When we talk about fan reaction, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. He is the player of a rival, and not just a player of a rival, but the player who took that rival to their first title in a very, very long time. As an Americanista, I got some feelings of like Nico Castillo coming back from Europe, having been a Puma star. And is there some, maybe when we talk about how fans will react, a little bit of a negativity to that?
Well, I just posted something on Twitter, and I just wanted to see the reactions from the fans, and it feels like Club America fans are just bragging now, right now. We can afford your player. He had to leave because you could not afford your biggest star anymore. He wanted to go to Saudi Arabia, make all that money. We can afford him. And if the salary is right, $3.5 million a year, that's almost what Florian Thauvin, André Pierre Gignac are making each year with Tigres. We know those are the highest earning players in Liga MX. So I'm just glad Club America is spending that money, because remember we had this conversation like a month ago. Our biggest concern coming to the transfer window was, can Club America afford an expensive player. It seemed like they can't, and it seemed like they're not done because Nestor Araujo is also in Club America's radar right now. But I agree with you. This is a player that America needed. Now, is he going to perform it at that level like he delivered with Cruz Azul because he delivered a championship for the first time in 24 years? That's going to make Club America fans really happy. Is he at the level of a Salvador Cabañas, of a Chucho Benitez? I don't know yet. I don't think he's there yet, but only time will tell.
No, but at least right now, if you look at the current transfer window, I think it's by far the biggest business that we've seen done across Liga MX. If there is a dagger here for America, as reported by Leon Lecanda, of that $6 million transfer fee they're going to have to pay, $3 million of it's going to go to Cruz Azul. So you're kind of paying the enemy to get this player. It's okay if he scores
they
the
need
goals,
the money.
It's okay.
We have the money. Cruz Azul needs them. Let him have the millions. Let's see what they do with those millions.
Yeah, I think you're also getting a very motivated player here. Uruguayan World Cup squad. Again, 5 months to the World Cup. Everybody motivated. I got to think that has something to do, Mal, with his decision to go from Saudi Arabia back to Liga MX for a little bit more visibility when it comes to his national team. So let's talk about America. This deal is done. Nestor Araujo looks all but done as well. So let's put those in the bank. Right?
Yeah.
Beyond that, do you think this America team needs another signing to really, truly be considered not just title contenders, but maybe title favorites in Liga MX?
Well, now you need better role players, right? There you have your stars. You already have Cabecita Rodriguez, Diego Valdez, Nestor Araujo, Guillermo Ochoa. That's the big four. That's your stars right there. Now you need better role players. And I think that's what America lacked in the past, not only season, the past year. Those players that some of them can come off the bench and make a difference. We thought they had them, right? We thought that maybe Rodriguez was a player coming from Puebla. He was going to be a game changer. Hasn't been that quite yet. Is Jurgen Damm maybe going to be that player? He seems like he's going to stay with Club America. They're going to give him not a long-term contract, but at least a contract for this season. Can he be that kind of role player? If Nestor Araujo actually signs with Club America, I think they're set in terms of stars. Now they're going to need some help with those role players.
Now, America may be set as far as stars on the men's side. The same cannot be said on the women's side because there's some potentially big news coming to Liga MX Femenil. How about this? The America women are close to signing Spanish international and Barcelona star Jenny Hermoso, the 32-year-old, an absolute legend at Barcelona. She's the all-time top scorer there. She's the all-time top scorer for Spain as well. To give you an idea of just how good she is, remember ESPN FC did that top 50 players in the world last year. She came in voted at number 17. Mal, let's go big picture here. What does this potential signing mean for Liga MX Femenil?
Well, this will be the biggest. This is the biggest news in history, in the short history of Liga MX Femenil. If a Mexican team can attract such a star player, at some point consider one of the top three players in the world, it means the league is doing something good. It's not only that they're doing something good because they have been doing great things for the past 5 years. It means that also money, good money, is being invested in Liga MX Femenil. She would come on a... it wouldn't cost America any transfer. Her contract with Barcelona expires on June 30th. She's carrying, though, an ankle injury that's going to prevent her from playing in the Euros in the upcoming weeks. But if that injury can actually heal, then Sebi, this is the biggest signing in the history of Liga MX Femenil. And hopefully it will be one of the upcoming signings because it's not only America. Tigres was also interested. Rayadas, they were also interested. So hopefully this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I agree with you. It has to be the biggest signing if it gets done in Liga MX Femenil history. And it's actually kind of the type of signing I think the National Women's Soccer League is a little bit jealous of, right? And here's one of the differences. Liga MX Femenil, there's not as many restrictions. There are restrictions, but not as many clear restrictions in what you can do with player salaries. It lets you go out and be aggressive and bring a player like this. So I think there's some NWSL front office types right now who are looking at Jenny Hermoso going to Liga MX Femenil and being like, oh, really? Okay, I didn't know you guys were on that level. I didn't know you were attracting those players. The other thing, Mal, I think it symbolizes here or signals is a potential power shift in the league. Remember, we always talk about Monterrey, no? Tigres, Rayadas is kind of the power. Things are changing. Chivas just won a title. If America has enough money to go after Jenny Hermoso, there may be a new center of power, right, in Liga MX Femenil.
Yeah, and it's not her. It's also Ángel Villacampa, who's going to be America's new manager. He comes from Spain. He won the league twice. Maybe playing a big factor in why Jenny has decided to pick Club America as her next destination. But you're absolutely right. Once we thought that Tigres, Rayadas, where it was impossible to reach that level of investment. Now, Chivas, they do have the money. America have the money. Pachuca also have deep pockets to try to go and make those signings. And that's seeing the glass half full. Let me just play devil's advocate for a moment.
Okay, because okay, then, I love this.
Because then you also have 8-10 other teams who by no means can afford a player like that. So my big concern is this going to look only like a Superliga of 4 or 5 teams? But what's going to happen with teams or clubs like Puebla, Cholos, Atlético de San Luis? They do not have those deep pockets, but maybe that's an opportunity to have a better farm system, very youth leagues, and trying to create their own product, trying to give more girls the opportunity to play at that level. Maybe that's what's going to happen. But in the end, it's great news to have that kind of player to come and play in Liga MX, hopefully, again, trying to attract more talent and make the league more relevant than it already is.
Yep, we'll keep an eye on it. It's not official just yet, but when it is official, we will discuss it right here for sure on Football Americas. Mal, let's flash back, shall we? Of course, it's a World Cup year, but World Cup's being played in the winter, usually played in the summer, so we got a lot of great anniversaries. June 20th, 1998, Mexico-Belgium group phase. Mexico goes from down 2-0 to come back and draw 2-2. But this match, Mal, best remembered for Cuauhtémoc Blanco's goal, flying through the air, outside of the left foot, a thing of beauty.
Absolutely. And the legend of Cabrito Arellano, who was seen right there next to Cuauhtémoc Blanco, the ideal sub for Manolo Lapuente, the manager at the time. I even remember the call. Shout out to Raul Orbañanos. That call is unforgettable. Qué servicio de Ramón. Qué remate de Cuauhtémoc. What a pass from Ramón Ramírez. What a finish from Cuauhtémoc Blanco. And that hurt. Remember, that was a game. Mexico started losing 2-0. Seth, I'm sorry, call you back. Oh, my God. But then Mexico came from behind, tied the game, and that opened the door to make it to the next round. But that was an impossible finish by Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Seth.
Yes.
How did he do it? I still try to think about it, and there's no way many players would have thought of launching their legs first and making contact with the ball and scoring like Cuauhtémoc did.
I think you just hit the nail on the head. Not a lot of players would have thought to do it. This is also the same World Cup against South Korea in the match prior where he kind of to the world debuts La Cuauhtemina.
Yeah.
It's the things that he could only do, that only he would think of. This is was such a great, for me, this is my favorite of all of Mexico's World Cups of my lifetime. You agree?
It's right there. I really enjoy 94 too, but 98, it is special because that was a team that struggled. If you remember, Boramir Utinovich was the manager. He was let go a year or less than that before the World Cup. Manolo Lapuente takes over, but you had great talent. Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Luis Hernández, Cabrito Arellano, Ramón Ramírez, Ricardo Peláez, Luis García. That was a very, very solid squad. I mean, a shame. They were leading against Germany in the round of 16. And if Luis Hernández finishes, then maybe we reach the quinto partido. I know, that's a dagger to the heart right there to go through that flashback.
You know what that team also had? They had goals. They scored 8 goals in that World Cup. So a proper team there that could find the back of the net. All right, let's do a quick trip in here, Matt, because we might have an idea of what Cruz Azul is going to be wearing next season. This is their new logo, and they've dropped the stars. Didn't they struggle for 24 years to get stars, and now they're taking the stars off? What am I missing?
Is this just a reality check for their fans? Are they sending the message of, we don't care about stars anymore, y'all? I mean, we cannot afford stars anymore. We're getting rid of the stars in our logo, and we're just gonna go by our name. And let's not forget, they're changing the full name of the team. Now it's Club de Fútbol Cruz Azul. It used to be Club Deportivo y Social Cruz Azul. But as you know, and as we have discussed on Football Americas, they're going through a lot of internal problems as an organization. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's another reason behind the change of the name to Club de Fútbol Cruz Azul. But I don't like them getting rid of the stars. It took them a quarter of a century to get the ninth. So, no. Tripping right here.
No.
Tripping.
Nine stars, and you're taking them off. You're definitely getting a tripping here on Football America. Sorry, Cruz Azul, for your new logo. All right, Mal, before we get out of here, I got some big news. Got to congratulate you on a big birthday this weekend, my man. I do want to point out you're still younger than Herc.
I am, and I'll always be. And I'll always be. Thank you. Thank you to everyone. I like the Club America Atlético de San Luis reference with the candles in yellow and blue.
Wow,
it's a pleasure
to
share my 25th birthday here on Football America.
Yes, yes. Forever 29, Mauricio Pedrosa joining us here on Football America.
Thank you, guys.
Great to have you, brother.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's Rodman. What a goal! Trinity Rodman. Her left foot to Nadim, the equalizer.
Clever. And the finish. It is a sixth for Portland. It's Porter.
Rips a shot. Left of home, CeCe Kaiser. Morgan back to Donnie.
Joining us next on our tour de force of guests here on Football America is none other than Julie Foudy. She comes to us after a very busy weekend in the National Women's Soccer League. We'll dive into that in just a second. But Julie, I was checking out the Laughter Permitted podcast feed. Brianna Scurry, Mia Hamm. Who's your guest booker? And can we get in on that action? Impressive stuff you got going on over there.
We had a little Title IX run. Bryce Scurry's got a book coming out, so you got to get Bryce Scurry on there. We're giving some love to the soccer community right now.
Absolutely. Exciting times. Absolutely recommend the Laughter Permitted podcast. Julie, let's get into what we saw over the weekend with an edition of Good, Bad, and Ugly NWSL style. We'll start with the good because we like to lift people up here on Football Americas. Becky Sauerbrunn scores a goal. Breaking news, Julie. Becky Sauerbrunn scores a goal, her first since 2019.
Yes.
How about that?
You can see the joy, the pure joy. Now if she can do it on the national team, that is when the country will go crazy for Becky Butter Sauerbrunn.
Yeah, 200 plus caps.
There's the beauty of it too.
No goals for the national team, but surely one out there. How about Portland, by the way? 6-0. They beat Houston 4-0 last weekend. Look out for the Thorns.
At will. They're just scoring at will. And good goals, too. Great one for her. Happy for her. You could see the excitement.
All right, from the good to the bad. Oh, my Washington Spirit. They were up 2-0 on Louisville, Julie. The match ends in a 2-2 draw. It means Washington's winless streak now hits 11 games, and they concede the equalizer there to Nadia Nadim in the 89th minute. Heartbreaking stuff. Julie, explain it to me. What's wrong with my Spirit?
That's a good question, Sebi. I think a lot of it has to do with them being overloaded on the front side of this schedule. And there's fatigue. I mean, they're giving up late goals. They've been producing goals. They fall like middle of the table in terms of production, but you're seeing that they're giving up a lot of these late goals. And I think that goes to their schedule. Their schedule was really heavy in this front end. It's going to lighten up a little bit, but there's been a lot of rotation of players. Andy Sullivan's been out with that calf injury. Kelly O'Hara with a hamstring nagging on her. So whew, it's been a tough run for Washington Spirit for sure.
They're the defending champs. It's just a sign of how quickly things can change, Julie, in the NWSL. It was back on May 7th that we were kind of acknowledging, maybe you would even say celebrating, the end of their 20-match unbeaten streak. And here we are talking about a totally different streak. Do you think this Spirit team, after all that we saw last year, is capable of finding their way again in what's left of the season?
Oh, absolutely. And when you have players like Ashley Hatch and Sanchez and Trinity Rodman leading that front line, and the national team players that we were just discussing, I think they will make a turn. But you can see the frustration, because as a player, when you give up these late goals as they are, and the streak is as long as it is, that just hurts. But I think this team has too much talent not to make that turn.
All right, we've covered the good. We've covered the bad. Let's get to the ugly. And once again, Julie, it involves referees. These are the scenes from the end of OL Reign against Angel City. Megan Rapinoe ejected after she got her second yellow from the bench for dissent. She left the field to cheers from her teammates, worth acknowledging that, as OL Reign went on to win the match by a final score of 1-0. Julie, it's not the first referee controversy that we've seen in recent weeks across the National Women's Soccer League. How big a concern is this, especially for the league's image, as it tries to show just what a professional, excellent product it has?
Yeah, and that's just it, isn't it? Is that they're trying to project that these things are changing. And I think this is one of the areas it falls. It's a different form of player protection, right? A different level of it. But it's still something that's so important, because there is consequences when you don't have your best players out on the field, or they're getting injured, as we've seen is such an issue. And so it goes back to what has been an ongoing discussion with NWSL, is paying to train those referees and getting better referees in there. And it costs money. I think this actually falls on the ownership group to come in and say, okay, yes, it's going to take some time, but they need to invest in training the top level referees to do NWSL games. Because right now they're not getting those. And I think it shows. And you can see clearly the frustration in Megan Rapinoe and a lot of players with the level of refereeing, because it means that more players are getting injured than they think should be.
Yeah, to be fair, it wasn't just Megan Rapinoe that was frustrated. We saw the reigning NWSL MVP, Jess Fishlock. You saw her upset there in the video. She also took to social media, to Twitter, to let her feelings be known. So clearly players right now are rallying around this issue. Let's see if it leads to some change. Real quick, Julie, before we get out of here, let's run it back with something that is now becoming almost a staple of this show: highlights of the San Diego Wave, and very specifically Alex Morgan, who had yet another brace, this time in San Diego's 3-0 win over Gotham. She just can't stop.
I know. She has looked so good. 11 goals on the season. That's more than she scored in any of her NWSL career seasons. And the thing about Alex Morgan is she's just looks so active and sharp and fresh. She's coming across from that left side. She gets an assist when she was on the right side. So she's playing in those wing positions on both sides and just so good at slashing and making that run into the center channel. And as we've seen, playing with tremendous confidence. And it couldn't come as a better time, as we know, given some of the injuries, especially with Kat Macario on the national team and Alex Morgan trying to prove that at almost 33, I think she turns 33 in a few days, that she is not done by any means.
We've talked about her chase for an NWSL MVP. I mean, at this rate, no way she doesn't get it this year, right?
I think she's on target for that for sure. And especially, you know, with the Wave, with the production they've had up front, I don't see in the feeds that she's getting, I don't see them slowing down in terms of their efficiency up front. And that's a good sign for Alex Morgan, because she's got so much around her that takes the pressure off her as well. When you see, you know, a Jakobsen running on one side, or you got Jodie Taylor in the middle, or Kelsey Turnbow as well playing in the nine. I mean, she's got so much talent around her that is giving her the ball as well and taking away some of that intense glare.
All right, Julia, as always, thank you so much for the time here on Football Americas. We look forward to having you back on the show and continued success with Laughter Permitted. Love the listen.
Thanks, Sebby.
For more, by the way, on the NWSL and the refs, head over to the website. We got a great article over there from Jeff Kasouf, a real thorough explainer of the whole situation on ESPN.com. Time for our top 10 golazos. We'll start in Major League Soccer. New York Red Bulls, Toronto FC, Luquinhas. Busting out the Ronaldo celebration. Delicate little touch, getting over the goalie and the defensive help. New York Red Bulls beating Toronto by a final score of 2-0. Luquinhas in at number 10. All right, let's see what beats that. Number 9, to the National Women's Soccer League. Sophia Smith. No! What a beauty, an absolute rocket from the young national teamer. Another look at it on her left foot. Portland scoring 6 on Orlando. This, the best of the lot from Sophia Smith. Number 8, Major League Soccer. Jefferson Savarino. Real Salt Lake against San Jose. Amazing touch in the box. Past the defender, past the goalie, and into the back of the net. RSL, 2-0 winners over San Jose. Jefferson Savarino in at number 8. More MLS at number 7. Sanssouci. Friend of all L3 fans with the absolute left-footed banger for Sporting Kansas City. They've been struggling, but they go away to Nashville and get a 2-1 win in the veteran Graham Zusi, the hero. Beautiful shot. Left-footed rocket from Sanssouci. Number 6, CONCACAF U20 tournament. Alexander Romero of the El Salvador U20s against Guatemala. Wow. Oof, the goalie, take a knee. Herc would have been appreciative of that. How about the US U20s? You see that? They're 10-0 over St. Kitts and Nevis. That's what I'm talking about. Number 5, back to the NWSL. Denise O'Sullivan. North Carolina Courage against the Houston Dash. From distance, off the volley, perfect technique. Denise O'Sullivan, this was an amazing game, by the way. 7 goals between the two teams. In the end, Houston completes the comeback. They win 4-3. Back to USL. Mishi Engelina. We have seen him before. Colorado Springs. Oh, it's not just the goal. No, no, no. With this guy, it's a celebration as well. Golazo. Backflips. You combine those, you got a shot at the top 5. A 4-3 win for Colorado Springs over Indy. Staying with USL. Number 3. Alejandro Guido, San Diego Loyal against Las Vegas. Yes, I have that jersey, San Diego Loyal. I have that jersey from Charlie. It is a thing of beauty. I can't wear it because the green screen doesn't cooperate. But as soon as I'm in a real studio without a green screen, believe me, I'm wearing that beautiful San Diego Loyal kit. Number 2, USL League 2, Ryan Crooks. West Virginia United against Tobacco Road. That's right, we'll dip into USL League 2. I mean, this is beautiful stuff all over. The assist is nice, but the finish, a delicacy. Gonna be tough to beat that. Number 1, MLS New York City FC, Thales Magno. Off the chest, off the volley, and into the net. A true beauty. New York City FC against the Colorado Rapids. Thales coming through at number 1. Before we get out of here, update, Open Cup quarterfinals this week available to you on ESPN Plus. Well, this week with an asterisk. Tuesday, we got LA Galaxy against Sacramento Republic. Wednesday, oh, what a doubleheader. Are you kidding me? Hudson River Derby plus the matchup, folks. Sporting Kansas City against USL League One third tier Union Omaha. The Cinderella story. And then we got to wait until June 29th, for Orlando City Nashville. Those are your quarterfinal matchups for the U.S. Open Cup. That's going to do it for this edition of Football Americas. But speaking of the Open Cup on Thursday, very, very special segment. I'm going to be in Connecticut in studio with Alejandro Moreno for the U.S. Open Cup semifinal draw. We're going to find out who's hosting the semifinals. Cannot wait. That's Thursday on Football Americas. Thanks to all of our guests, Craig Burley, Julie Foudy, Mauricio Pedrosa, Alejandro Moreno, and of course, great job from Sam Borden in his one-on-one interview with Walker Zimmerman. We'll see you on Thursday for the next edition of Football Americas right here on ESPN+. Thanks for watching.